When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Thanks for downloading another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Time once again for another guest to join me and select their Dream 15. And this week's guest is a man who's used to selecting a side or two, having coached all over the world, including stints with Namibia, Leeds, Scarlets and Cardiff Blues. It's of course Phil Davis, the former Wales and Athletics second row. Had a chat with Phil last week and really enjoyed it. He's such an incredibly nice bloke, and I even had to keep him waiting for half an hour while I was stuck on a conference call with work, and didn't bat an eyelid, was completely understanding, and again, just testament to what a thoroughly nice guy he is. I had a really enjoyable chat with him as he selected his side, and it also means that the Attacking Scrum Invitational 15 is looking a bit stronger. This is the side that I've got made up of all the guests who have joined us in the past, and that only leaves one weak link now, and that's me in the second row. But at least I've got Phil Davis in there to boost it up. Hopefully you really enjoy this episode. Look forward to hearing your feedback, and of course a big thanks once again to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to stock up on some great quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Have a look, you won't be disappointed. Right, sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Dream 15.
They'll run, I'm sure. Bar Jones, too low. There's Rush. Rush with the dummy hold. Now Neil back, his support outside. Joe Stanley, wide out is Campisi. Campisi floats it over the head. Back inside, Bar Jones for the corner. And Phil Davis rounds it off.
Welcome to another episode of Dream 15 by the Attacking Scrum. You'll know the format by now. Each week I'm joined by a different guest to talk us through a team that they have selected, made up of their favourite players of all time. It might be the best, it might just be their favourites, but I'm delighted to say that joining me for this episode is former Wales forward, fantastic coach as well, Phil Davis. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm good, Jed. Thanks. Yeah, very well indeed. Thank you. You?
Yeah, good, thanks. It's great to have you on. Obviously, you've been coaching for a very long time now, and you will have had many a selection dilemma across that period of time. How do they compare to selecting your Dream 15?
It was very... I decided in the end just to sort of pick players I'd be very fortunate to either play with or coach over the last 30-odd years. I think it's 35 years, actually, so... You know, I was very, very lucky and had a wonderful time trying to do so. it was amazing. You know, some really interesting, iconic names that people will recognise, and maybe one or two people won't recognise, but they've all had a sort of massive impact on my playing and coaching career. So it's been a wonderful opportunity. Thank you.
I think that's been the beauty of doing these, actually, is you know, some guys have gone down the approach of, you know, picking the world beaters. You pick Dan Carter and Richie McCaw, and others have gone for these kind of cult heroes who perhaps are names that that have been a little bit forgotten. So it's been wonderful kind of trawl down memory lane. So we've really enjoyed doing these and can't wait to hear your side. So let's jump straight into it, and we'll start with Loosehead Prop.
Loosehead Prop, right. I've played, you know, when I played initially, Jeff Whitefoot was in the Welsh team playing with Cardiff. You know, we had Ricky Evans, Anthony Buchanan playing with Llanelli. And then a couple of guys, you know, I've coached, you know, Mike Shelley was a real stalwart at Leeds, Justin Thomas at the Scarlets. But Gethin Jenkins has got my vote as a Loosehead because, you know, he was one of, if not the brightest rugby players I've ever been involved with as a player or a coach. Such an in-depth knowledge of the game and, a little bit ahead of his time as well in the way that he thinks and applies himself to the game. I know he's coaching now and I think he'd be a hell of a coach. So, you know, some great players there, but, you know, Gethin for me was the loose end that sticks out for me really over those 30-odd years.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those. I think everyone who we've spoken to has considered Gethin, and, you know, people like me who didn't pick him, we were kind of going out of our way to not pick him because he is that iconic a player in Wales. And you're right, ahead of his time and such a clever player. But I'm interested there, obviously, with you, you know, we haven't done as much coaching as you have. For a layman like me, you know, you look at Gethin Jenkins, you think he'd make a fantastic coach. You'll obviously, you know, you will know him a lot better than we do. What is it that he'll be able to bring above and beyond just the, you know, the skills that he has as a player?
I think, you know, apart, you know, his game sense, again, if that makes sense. He was just, you know, he would be sort of reading a game maybe, two or three phases ahead of other people, you know. He'd be instructing people to get into positions, that were covering things that were about to happen rather than things that were happening, you know. I'm not saying he had a crystal ball. He had a strong game sense, on the field, you know, in terms of decision making and his communication, you know, with his teammates was pretty good. He could be pretty robust. You know, I think everybody's seen The Last Dance very recently with Michael Jordan, you know. Gethin was that type of player, from my experience with him at the Blues, where he'd really push, really, really high standards. So, you know, that shone through, you know, because he had such a long career. And I think that's what will help him when he coaches, his understanding, of the game and particularly the intensity of the game, in the modern era.
Well, it's a fantastic pick, and it's a real kind of a real big hit to get going with. We kind of think of this as this show as a bit like Desert Island Discs, but for rugby. And Gethin Jenkins is probably like he's like your Beethoven or Bach or something, which is probably the first time he's been compared to those. But he's an absolute wonderful player and a great pick. Right, let's move on to Hooker.
Again, Flippinek, this was a tough one because, you know, back in the day in Llanelli, you know, I played with, you know, with Di Fox there, Kerry Townley, Andrew Lamerton, some great players, and Garen Jenkins, of course, you know, Billy James, when I played for Wales, and Garen was an amazing player, Garen Jenkins, great character and what a player. But I've gone, you know, and I've played with Brian Moore as well, the old English, you know, ex-English hooker, Coach Gordon Bullock, Coach Matthew Rees, Smiler again, an amazing character, tough man. But I've gone for Mark Regan, England, British Lions, coached up in Leeds, actually. He was a character, Ronnie, that's for sure. But the job he had a massive impact on our team when we brought him to Leeds, and he was very instrumental in gluing the boys together when we had a Heineken Cup run, but also when we won the Power Gen Cup. So as an influencer in a group, and a character in the group, you know, and a real tough nut as a rugby player, you know. Mark was a top player.
He always strikes me as one of those players that would be top of the list of players you wouldn't want to play against, if you see what I mean. Like, he's got so much niggle and hard work in him that he must be an absolute nightmare to play against, and one of those players you'd love to play with.
Absolutely. All great players, so blessed to have played or coached them. But he holds a record, okay? He's not short to telling people it, mind. But every club, you know, obviously played at Bath, played at Bristol, played at Leeds. But any of his old clubs, when he went back there with his new club, he never lost to any of his former clubs playing for his current club. If you understand what I mean, he's hell of a record that. But
And that must be a nice feeling as well. Always, going back to your old team and coming away with a win every time.
Yeah, we had a massive game back in the day at Bath. And you know, it was the year we won the Power Gen Cup, and we won 9 straight games in the Premiership, and we were 12th at Christmas, and everybody was saying, well, you're going to go down. But Ronnie had a huge belief about him, and we ended up finishing 8th in the division that year, and our final game was in Bath. And he's very respectful, you know, after the games, but, to the club he had previously been at, but I was a massive influence for our team. I love coaching him. What a character.
Right, so Gethin Jenkins and Mark Regan at number 1 and 2. Who completes the front row?
Again, you know, I played with some great tight ends. You know, when I first got in the Welsh team, Stuart Evans was there, Ian Eidman from Cardiff, Stuart Evans from Swansea, Lawrence Delaney, you know, we played at Llanelli with Sean Gale, lots of, you know, great guys. Gavin Kerr, Scottish international at Leeds. But Tavita Tamiapau was a tight end that I coached in Worcester when I was there with Richard Hill, the ex-English captain. And we took over after Mike Ruddock left, actually. And got him promoted in the first year, and then we sustained the position in the Premiership in the second year, which is what they wanted at that time. And Tavita played, you know, we played at the World Cup for Tonga, played many tests for Tonga, but he was one of the strongest men I've ever, you know, coached or been involved with. Fau Felice was another one at Cardiff Blues, an amazing man and a player, but Tavita, technically, and for raw strength, he was incredible. I remember one day playing at Six Ways against Gloucester in the Premiership, and Nick Wood was playing for Gloucester. He was pretty well-renowned prop in the Premiership in those days. And Tavita, you know, absolutely, you know, put him through a tumble dryer type of thing, you know. He absolutely dominated him, and he's my tight end pick, one of the strongest men I've ever worked with, coaching or playing with. You know,
they must be having players like that in your squad. It must be almost tempting to be the first name on the team sheet when you've got someone who can just give you such set piece dominance.
Oh, incredible. Incredible. And at the time in Worcester, we had Phil Larder, who's worked with Clive Woodward when England won the World Cup in 2003. And Phil was our defence coach. And, you know, a lot of the defensive patterns were about looking after Tavita in the defensive line, because he was so, so important in the scrum. We would always sort of get him as near as we could to the ruck at times. You know, he's a bit dominant around there, but maybe not so dominant out in the wider areas. But he was a character. I loved his coffee. Him and a guy called Aleki Latui. He was a hooker for Tonga and hooker for Worcester at the time. And I used to have a regular Wednesday morning coffee with the two of them and chat to them. You know, they'd come as a pair, the two of them, you know. But characters, brilliant. Great guy.
Fantastic. So it's Tavita Tamiapau makes up the front row. Let's move into a position you'll know a lot about in the second row. What were you looking at here? A bit of a balance of a workhorse and an athlete. What's your thought process for the second row?
Two athletes, but you know, two athletes with big work rates, particularly one of them. You know, again, I've been so lucky to, you know, to play with Phil May at Clenessie, Tony Copsey, you know, Gareth Llewellyn, you know, when we played for Wales together. I think of Worcester, where Greg Rawlinson was an All Black, terrific player, tough man. Craig Gillies played at Worcester, played at Llanelli. Outstanding line-out exponent. But the two second rows, really, Tom Palmer's one, who played for me at Leeds, came as a 17-year-old and left 10 years later. Went on to play for Wasps, winning the Heineken Cup, the Premiership. Went to Stade Francais, now coaching out in France, actually, with Richard Hill in Rouen, in Pro de Deux.
Played for England as well, didn't he, Tom, I think?
Played for England, 70-odd caps for England. You know, great player, great guy, great lad, comical, good man, great man. Amazing work rate, good line-up forward, but, you know, worked hard, great defender. I remember his debut for Leeds against Harlequins, and I remember Will Greenwood coming back on a switch, if you like, when we played Harlequins in a cup match, and Palmer absolutely levelled him. And he was only, I think he was 19 at the time, and we all looked at each other and thought, this kid, technically an outstanding rugby player. Great technician on the line-out, as I say, and a great defensive technician, tackle technique, you know, equivalent to the likes of Warburton, you know, in the modern game, you know, outstanding player, really. And the number five is Robert Norster, who I played with for Wales, you know, the Norse British Lion. Tremendous guy. He used to take up a lot of mirror time prior to the game, make sure his headband was right. But great guy, brilliant, real statesman, fantastic guy. Great player, great team manager for Wales back in the day. You know, but he was a real athlete as well. Good line-out forward. Those two really are the second rows, Tom Palmer and Bob Norster. So, you know, one England international, one Welsh international.
There we go. Yeah, that's the beauty of this Dream 15, is you don't have to worry about any international rivalries. It's like pulling on a Barbar's shirt or a British and Irish Lions shirt. So right, that's the type five. Let's move on to the back row. And again, what are you looking for here? Is it, you know, we always talk about balance in the back row. Is it a mixture of fetchers and big ball carrying eight? What have you gone for here, Phil?
Yeah, really, you know, ball carriers and work rate, really. And, you know, I've been, you know, so blessed in this area. It's incredible. That's why I started my career as number eight, obviously. But, you know, number six, you know, I played at Clenessie with Gary Jones for Pontypridd, right? 8 out of 10 boomer. Always give you, you know, consistent performer, incredible, really. You know, Emma Lewis, Taro the Bull, he was an outstanding, you know, player. Martin Morris, who played from Neath, played for Wales with him. And coached, you know, some great number sixes as well. But Mark Perrigo gets my vote there. You know, my youngest daughter's godfather, and, you know, sometimes he was a bit like Lord Lucan. You could never find him, but, you know, he used to have his sabbaticals from the game, but, you know, he would have, you know, if he'd have had a consistent run at rugby, he'd have been an all-time great, I'm sure. His footballing skills, his tackle technique, you know, his work rate was phenomenal. So he's you know, he's my sort of number six.
Phil, do you know what? I think this is, I think you might be the 10th guest we've had on to do this. And you're the third person to pick Mark Perrigo, which, when you think about all the back row forwards in the history of rugby, there is obviously something about Perrigo that just resonates with people. You know, whether you played with him like yourself or it's fans watching him from the terrace, there is obviously something that caught the imagination about the way Perrigo played.
Oh, he was. We used to. His mum, God bless her, she's. Passed away now, but she used to live in Pembrey on top of the mountain, and we used to, Mark was obviously living there back in the day, and we used to we used to go down. I used to drive down, and we used to go running down in Pembrey Country Park with his axe. And we used to. Part of our training was the trees were felled, but part of it was chopping those felled trees up into smaller pieces, if you like. And that was part of our functional strength training, if you like, back in the day, and running. And he was an amazing player. Great character, very intelligent guy. You know, we joined the police force together. He stayed a bit longer than I did. Then he, you know, he's joined the fire brigade, fire service. He's still in there, I think. I haven't seen him for a while, actually. But, you know, great, great guy all round, and, you know, a fantastic rugby player who should have had more caps, who should have, you know, been a British Lion, but there's a lot of coulda, shoulda type of thing, you know. But amazing player.
Yeah, and clearly, clearly a massive cult hero, Mark Perrigo. Right, who's joining him in the back row then?
Well, number seven again. You know, played with David Pickering. You know, back in the day for Wales, played with Lynn Jones. Lynn Jones, a brilliant player. Lynn Jones, you know, Justin Tipperick of our day, I would say. Incredibly creative footballer and a brilliant coach nowadays. You know, Justin Tipperick, of course, Pat Sanderson, who was captain of England at one stage, coached him up in Worcester. Josh Navidi is an under-20 international. Tipperick is an under-20 international. But the number seven for me, he's got to be Warburton, really. You know, British Lion Welsh captain. Fantastic individual. One of the most professional rugby players I've ever coached. Very diligent, you know, both on and off the field in his preparation, in the way he applied himself on the field. So Warby's my number seven, and he'll be the captain of this team, I think.
Yeah, it's I'm not going to talk about Sam Warburton too much, because anyone who's listened to this before, you know, they know just how, you know, he's just such a hero to me, and we were lucky enough to have Sam on as well, and you know, a thoroughly nice bloke with it. But you mentioned there, you know, selecting him as your captain. I suppose the example we've always seen as Sam is he's more of a lead by example captain rather than a, you know, a big fire and brimstone type figure. Is that kind of is that the right assessment of Sam as a captain?
Yeah, he's a very intelligent rugby player. He's a good feel for the game. Obviously, developed under Warren as a captain, and has got a good feel for the game. Outstanding the way he managed referees. You know, really, really good. You know, you think back to when the Lions drew the series in 2017 in New Zealand. You know, a lot of that had to do with Sam's cool head and understanding of what was required at that particular time to manage the referee. You know, he was really good at having a good feel for the game, and also and what it needed, you know, as I say, in relationships with referees, but also around the breakdown. You know, his decision making there was one of the best I've seen in the modern era, in particular. You know, he'd very rarely make bad decisions at the breakdown, and he'd normally get some really, you know, crucial turnovers. So he, you know, he's a fantastic player. You know, not just a really good ambassador, but on the field, he had a great understanding of what was required, whether dealing with teammates, whether he's making decisions on you know, in his own game, on his own role, and also, you know, he was you know, one of the best captains, you know, in terms of working with referees as well.
And he's taken, obviously, you know, a role with the national side now as an advisory coaching role. How do you see Sam going in that position that he's got?
Oh, he'll definitely put a lot of effort into it, that's for sure. And, you know, his experience, you know, and his work ethic, and, you know, his analytical understanding of the game, I think will go a long way to make him, you know, to make him a coach, if, you know, make him an outstanding coach, if that's what he decides to do long term, you know.
Excellent. Right. Well, yeah, definitely no arguments from me on that pick at seven. What about number eight? Again, obviously, another position you know very well yourself.
Paul Moriarty, Stuart Davis, boys I played against, played with for Wales. Terrific players. Muzz Paul in particular, I know, is, you can see, you know, where Ross gets his gets his attributes from, his dad and his uncle. But Paul, you know, Richard as well was a great player I played with for Wales. Captain of the first World Cup team back in 87. So, you know, some great players. Julian Williams, very underrated player at the Scarlets. Brilliant footballer, Julian. Policeman for over 20-odd years in Llanelli. You know, Toby Faletau was somebody we coached in the under-20s. Zach Fonati was a Samoan guy I coached at Leeds. Big, bear of a man, really. Really powerful. But Quinnell is my pick as eight. Scott Quinnell. Came in at Llanelli as a youngster. Great character, world class in his day, unstoppable, really, carrying the ball. You know, we've seen some brilliant ball carriers over the time. You know, Wayne Shelford was one. You know, you talk about some of the big French eights of the late 80s, 90s, brilliant ball carriers. You know, Rodriguez was in there, Session, but Quinnell, you know, Delalio was a great number eight, but Quinnell was, you know, was world class. So when you look at that back row of Perrigo, Warburton, work rate, decision making, aggression, and then you've got Quinnell, ball carrying, aggression, talisman, really. You know, that try he scored against France in 1994 was, you know, put him on the map, didn't it, really? And, you know, he's grown ever since. And big player, big personality, great guy.
You're right. That try obviously put him on the map, and not long afterwards he, you know, kind of headed north. I think what's so incredible with Scott Quinnell as well is that when he came back, you know, he had as big an impact, if not a bigger impact, than he had when he left. You know, wherever he was playing, he had just had such a huge presence. Whether that was for Wales, for Llanelli, for Scarlets, for Wigan, for Richmond, you know, whenever he pulled on that, for the Lions, whenever he pulled on that eight jersey, you just felt like you were in safe hands, you know, if he was on the pitch.
Oh yeah, he was, you know, people talk a lot about presence in life, and you know, particularly in sport, and you know, Scott had huge presence on and off the field, but you know, particularly on the field. And you know, I still, you know, remember that. I think I was in Leeds at the time in 2001 when he scored that try. I think it was the second test against Australia for the Lions. And he's just putting the ball down and just nodding his head as if to say, told you.
It's one of those great images, isn't it? Because he's got a proper schoolboy grin on at the time. And yeah, I think it reflected how everyone back home watching was feeling, you know, that kind of, you know, he kind of played rugby the way that you played it as a kid, you know, a smile on his face and bags of enthusiasm.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Good stuff.
It's not a bad pack, that. Good ball winning, good set piece, good ball winning, huge work rate. So I'll have a go, I think.
That is a proper coach's pack there, Phil. You've given it a lot of thought, I can tell. And we're looking forward to hearing who's going to be joining them in the backs. And we're going to do that after this very, very short break. Right, Phil Davis, you have picked a very mean pack, and it should free up plenty of ball for a back division. I'm very intrigued to see what you're going for here, whether we've got sidesteppers and running fly halves, or are you going for a more pragmatic kick the leather off the ball type halfbacks. Let's start with number nine and see where it goes from there.
Yeah, no, we've looked at a bit of balance in the back line. We got some mercurial talent. We got some amazing competitors. We got arguably two of the best goal kickers in the world over the past 15, 20 years, maybe. So, yeah, it's a good balance to it. So, scrum half is, again, flipping heck. When I started thinking about this, I was in a bit of dreamland, thinking of some of the players I played with and coached. And, you know, my first cap with Terry Holmes, you know. My first two caps, actually, then he went north. And what a player. I remember him giving Nigel Melville's, the England scrum half of that day. Terry swapped his jersey with Nigel and he said, look, you keep yours and you can have this one. As so I kept my own first Welsh jersey, my number 8 shirt, and he gave me his England shirt. So very grateful. He was classic, a legend, yeah. Guy. What a, you know, tough, uncompromising player, passer, you know, just, you know, not far behind Gareth Edwards, really. You know, he more or less took over from him, didn't he? So, you know, Terry Holmes, you know, played with Rupert Moon at the Scarlets, you know, Jonathan Griffiths, Robert Jones for Wales, you know, coach Dwayne Peel, you know, at the Scarlets. Sean Perry was an England international in Worcester. You know, played with Nick Farr-Jones for the Barbers. You know, played with Pierre Babizet, the French scrum half out in South Africa for a World 15. Just incredible players. But the scrum half I've gone for, Justin Marshall, I only coached him for a year at Leeds, but he was one of the most competitive individuals I've ever been around in my life. His halfback partners are pretty mean competitor as well, by the way, but he was, you know, incredible scrum half. Great personality, a bit larger than life, you know, not a bad commentator, no, actually, well, a pretty good one. So with all those players, Terry Holmes was, you know, could have picked any of them really, but the reason for Marshall, such a competitor, you know, you don't get 81 caps for the All Blacks if you don't know what you're doing type of thing, you know. So yeah. It was his longevity as well, and his success with New Zealand, his success in Super Rugby with the Crusaders, so great player.
I mean, that 81 caps is incredible when you think about it, because the era that he was playing was before, you know, you had 10, 12 internationals a season. And also, you know, towards the end of his career, like you said, he came and played in England, he played in Wales. So to have 81 caps during that period of time he was playing, it just meant, again, he was virtually undroppable.
Yeah, he was. And in Leeds, you know, flip an egg, woe betide if you wanted to rest him or you took him off before the end of the game. I think, you know, I think other coaches who've coached him, and I've chatted to them about, you know, he didn't understand that. He wanted to play every minute of every single game. But a nice guy, character, you know, lovely family. Nicole and his two boys, good man, great player.
Fantastic. Right, and who's what are the options at outside half alongside Justin Marshall?
Well, played at Llanelli with Gary Pearce, Kevin Thomas, a really talented fly half. Not many people might know Kev, but very talented cricketer, great all-rounder. Played, you know, in the early 80s with him down in Llanelli. Very talented. Neil Jenkins, of course, brilliant. But Jonathan Davis has got to have my brother-in-law. He's got to have he's got to be the number 10. You know, brilliant. Union player, arguably even better rugby league player, legend in rugby league, legend in both codes, you know. So he's my 10, you know. He can beat people in a phone box with a sidestep. Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm growing up watching rugby, I don't remember him playing Union first time around. I remember it when he came back and played for Cardiff, but I remember watching him play league because, again, my brother just said, you know, you have to watch this guy play. And, you know, my brother had no interest in league, but he had such an obsession with the Welsh players who'd moved up north. And it was absolutely incredible. It's not just the ability to beat a player with a sidestep. That pace just carries on going. It's not just quick off the mark. He just seems to get quicker and quicker and quicker. But I think you particularly notice that when he's playing league.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've seen some of the tries he scored, you know, in Australia, for example. Yeah. Were incredible. You know, he'd sidestep, he'd break that first line of defence, you know, just outside his own 22, and he's gone. And he, you know, he scored it. And, you know, arguably the most famous try was the one he scored at Wembley against
Australia,
against the
yeah.
And, you know, when he rounded Brett Mullins, and that is no mean feat for sure. So I was, you know, very lucky. You know, I coached Andy Gould at Goody, ex-England Leicester fly half at Worcester, and he was a really talented rugby player, great tactician, understood the game, very good goal kicker. So, again, I mean, so blessed to be involved with so many top players and, you know, more importantly, top blokes over the time, you know. But he stands out. You talk about world class and match winners, there's your man.
Yeah, he's certainly that. Right, let's have a look at the outside backs. Should we start with the wingers?
Yeah, wingers, you know, gone for, you know, power in one and, you know, feet to foot, try scoring in the other. But, you know, the power scores as well, by the way. But, you know, again, going back to Llanelli with Carwyn Davies back in the day, brilliant left foot sidestepper. God bless him. He's no longer with us. But, you know, we had Glenn Webb, you know, played for Wales with Glenn, yeah. Came to the first World Cup. Brilliant player, powerful, strong, flipping heck character, Glenn. David James at Llanelli, you know, I think he's still the Heineken Cup highest, you know, point scorer, you know, and many, you know, many more, I'm sure. But Andre Schneiman gets my vote as the left winger. Played centre, 50-odd caps for the Springboks. Played in Leeds, currently coaching back in Yorkshire, actually. At Millhouse School in Doncaster, coaching Huddersfield Rugby Union next year as well. So he, you know, he's one of two Springboks in the team, actually. Yeah, so Andre Schneeman's 11. Number 14, Mark Jones, again, I've coached now for the Scarlets, great try scorer for Wales. Now coaching the Crusaders, actually, in Super Rugby.
Right, Tom
James, great winger. In the Blues, I used to love watching Tom when he was in full flight. What a player. Great step, great speed, strength, you know. And we had Marcel Garvey, who was another winger, actually. He was at Gloucester for a while.
Rapid, wasn't he? Absolutely rapid.
He was rapid, Marcel. Great feet, powerhouse, you know. But it's got to be Ian Evans, eh?
Yeah.
You know, captain of Wales 28 times, a record when he retired, and, you know, three-time British Lion. And, you know, if anybody remembers that Scotland game, you know, back in the early 90s, I think it was, where, you know, Bill McLaren calling Merlin the Magician with, you know, three or four sidesteps, started in the 5 metre channel and ends up under the post. With his sidestep and so incredible 1998 that was actually incredible. Wales Triple Crown, yeah, incredible, great player, and my best friend, really, top man.
Yeah, wonderful. I mean, again, I've bored listeners with my stories of falling in love with rugby when Ian Evans scored in 93 at the Old Arms Park against England.
Yeah,
you know, it's just those magic moments that I think is you know, as a fan, they're the ones that really stick with you. Which is what I was going to ask you: is there a moment from when you were watching rugby as a kid that you kind of you associate with the moment where you really fell in love with the game and said, "That's what I want to do. That's what I want to do when I grow up."
Yeah, it was a couple actually. It was one. You know, I grew up watching, you know, our team in the 70s, and I used to go down the tennis courts in Seven Sisters playing, you know, rugby after with my mates. We used to have a big size five, this big plastic rugby ball. And that's what I grew up watching. And one was, I know this might be a bit strange, but, you know, Derek Quinnell's urgency to get on the field when Mervyn Davies was in Niger against France back in the day. I think that was 1976, maybe. And also Gareth Edwards' try against Scotland. Remember when he went through the mud and he did a forward roll after he put the ball down?
Another great Bill McLaren commentary, isn't it? It would be a miracle if he could. And he gets there and he just looks up and his face is covered in mud.
Those two, for not strange, but they were two iconic moments for me. And also, you know, Bill's David Paddy Jones and Bill McLaren in particular back in those days. They were the commentators I remember, you know, and Bill was, oh my word. I remember, you know, meeting him for the very first time, and he used to give me these hoit balls, used to call him. He's sort of a little bit like
the coil sweets, aren't they? Yeah.
Coil sweets, oh my word alive, they were terrible. Bill used to like him, and if they were good enough for Bill, they were good enough for me, type of thing. But yeah, it was wonderful. And, you know, I had a great upbringing at the club, Vincent Sisters, you know. First coach, Morris Davis, was, again, he's passed on now, God rest his soul. But there was him there, and there was a lot of senior players at the time in Seven Sisters who were brilliant, and gave me a real grounding and have kept me grounded ever since, really. So, yeah, Those good memories, actually.
Fantastic. Well, Yian Evans, it is in the 14 shirt that everyone is so familiar with him wearing. What about the centres, Phil?
Oh, number 12. Well, I started off playing with Ray Gravel, would you believe? Man. And he was, Grav was, oh, incredible. I still, amazing man. Oh, my God, I still get the hairs in the back of my neck stand up when I just even think about him. And, you know, he was amazing. He was the first captain and the first captain I played for when I went to Llanelli as a 17-year-old, 18-year-old, you know. So he, you know, he was amazing. You know, Robert Ackerman was in the Welsh team as well at that time. Great, great player. Nigel Davis I played with, obviously. Great, very creative, number 12. You know, I coached Jamie Roberts at the Blues, you know. JR, tremendous guy, wonderful attitude to life, but also a great rugby player, obviously, you know. You know, in Worcester, we had a guy called Dale Rasmussen, tough as old boots, tough as teak, you know. New Zealander, you know, he was a defensive captain there. He was brilliant, brilliant player. With Ashley Beck, Scott Williams coming through the 20s when we coached them, you know. But I've gone for Bram van Straten, another Springbok. Best goal kicker, Neil Jenkins, was amazing as a kicker. Who I still think's arguably, you know, the best goal kicker ever. But he's got a lot of rivalry, and Bram is up there. You know, I remember him kicking a goal once to beat Harlequins at the Stoop. And we were down 15-16, and he just grabbed the ball on our 10-metre line in front of the post. And I thought, what is he doing? But anyway, he put it down and he banged it over. It was still going up as he was going over. And I think it was Steve Lander at the time, blew up. And we beat Quinns 18-16, our second year in the Premiership, back in 2003, I think it was. But the toughest man you'd ever meet. He'd be on crutches Monday, Tuesday. And then he'd be putting more tackles in and the front five then on a Saturday, as a front five combined. Tremendous player, just a real hard man and a wonderful person. Wonderful man. Yeah, great. He's coaching EP Kings now. And helped us help the kickers in Namibia last year, prior to the World Cup, did a bit of coaching. On WhatsApp, would you believe? Although he came to Namibia and coached the boys live. After that, because he was professionally coaching, he was at the Sharks then, actually, in the Super Rugby, but the boys would send him video clips on WhatsApp, and then he'd do a bit of coaching afterwards, you know, critiquing their technique after he'd worked with them in Namibia. So a great man and a great player. You know, it was amazing to play and coach some great players, and, you know, Grav or Jamie, I could put it, or Nigel, put anybody in there. But Bram was a match winner and you know, and a huge impact for us in Leeds. Won us about, must have won us about 40, 50% of our games when he first came. Incredible.
Okay, well, I'll leave it to you to explain to Jiffy that he's not taking the goal kicks as well then. But I suppose if you've got Bram van Straten in your side, there's only ever going to be one goal kicker there.
Correct.
Right, who partners him in the centre?
That's Regan King.
Magician.
No. That guy, right, I would have paid to watch him training, that fella. He's still to this day one of the most incredible rugby players I've ever coached or been involved with, you know. You know, Mike Hall was a good player. Scott Gibbs, you know, I played with Scott. You could argue Scott was a 12 as well. But I like a bit of power in the 13 channel at times, particularly with Scott, because he was so quick and nimble on his feet. You know, with that try he scored against England back in 1999 when Scott Cornell gave him that pop pass. But, you know, there were some, you know, great players. I coached Richie Blackmore, who was a Kiwi international, rugby league international, actually, in Leeds. We had Wendell Saylor up in Leeds, who played 13 a little bit for us as well before he went back. He was a rugby league player at the time before he converted with the Wallabies. Some brilliant players. But this guy, I remember, I think it was the away game. We had Toulouse back-to-back in the Heineken the year we got the semi-final with the Scarlets. And we were down at half-time. David James had scored, I think it was 34-17, I think. something like that, or 24. No, it was 34, I'm pretty sure, 17 at half-time. So we went in, we talked a bit, then Regan King, and we came back out and actually won the second half, 42-odd points, scored a bonus try win against Toulouse, which is pretty unheard of in those days. And Regan was amazing, just sees things. He's a similar to Gethin Jenkins. His game sense incredible, would see space, you know, a phase in advance type of thing, you know. Just an amazing player. Just a shame, you know, he'd have had a load of caps for Wales if he'd have not had that one cap for the All Blacks. But a brilliant player.
Yeah, absolutely. And just those ball skills and those things he could do, absolutely magical. Again, I suppose those occasions where you find yourself in tight spots, losing to Toulouse away, having players like that who you know can pull bits of magic out of thin air, that must help as a coach.
Oh, incredible. Incredible. You know, when you're coaching, you know, people, you know, like I mentioned previously, you know, with Faletau, Sam Warburton, these guys, and Ronnie Regan and Andre Snyman, you know, you don't tell them what to do. You just, you know, provide a framework and they bring that framework to life, you know, of the way you want to play, because they're so intelligent and it's about, you know, challenging them, obviously, managing them, looking after them and giving them the confidence to, you know, to go out there and express themselves. And Regan was one of those guys. He wouldn't say boon or bar to anybody sometimes off the field unless he'd had a few beers in him. And he was quite talkative then. But as a player, you know, on the field, you just couldn't shut him up. His communication was incredible. And him and Stephen Jones and Gavin Evans, actually, they were the 10, 12, 13 of the first year, and in particular at the Scarlets where I coached. And, you know, we went on that run in the Heineken Cup where we won, you know, 7 games on a bounce and beat Munster in the quarter-final at Stradley. Those three were mercurial, really. But Regan, you know, he brought the creative element out and gave people confidence that we could play from anywhere, you know.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, you can imagine him making those breaks and having Ian Evans on his shoulder. You know, you're going to be scoring some fantastic looking tries with this back line, I think. And then one position left, though, Phil, it's fullback. Who's in the running?
Yeah, well, Martin Gravel was a fullback I played with at Stradley back in the day, and he was one of the finest exponents of coming into the line as a fullback I've ever met. His angles and timing were incredible, you know. So he's one, you know, great player. Paul Thorburn's another one I played with for Wales a lot. Paul, you know, was captain of Neath, captain of Wales. Great guy, Thorby. And Tim Stimson, you know, British Lion, England fullback, Leicester fullback, broke the Scarlet's hearts once in the Heineken Cup semi-final in the early days of that competition. Ian Bolshaw's another one I coached at Leeds. Very talented rugby player. And Lee Halfpenny is my fullback. Again, with Sam, you know, arguably, well, the two of them are the most diligent professionals I've ever coached. Amazing lads off the field. They do so much for the community, for helping young players. I remember asking the both of them once to go to the Heath to see a terminally ill lad, you know, and they went there and saw him, and his parents couldn't. It was amazing, you know, the effect he had on the lad. He died a week later, unfortunately, but for them to give their time and go and speak to that lad in the difficult circumstances, you know, gave a real boost to him and his family at that time, a tough time, you know, Jed. So, brilliant guys, and you know, Lee again. You know, goal kicking, you've got Lee, goal kicking, you've got Bram, you've got Jonathan, strong goal kicking there.
Well, they could take it in turns by the look of it. I mean, just to touch on Lee Halfpenny a bit more there, because again, I think you obviously, as you mentioned with Warburton, I think they kind of almost represent like another step up in terms of professionalism in Welsh rugby. Those players kind of epitomise the almost like the rugby obsessives, you know, people who are always striving to improve those half a percent in their game just to make themselves better overall.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you got Alan Wynne Jones. If you look in that category, I think you got Ken Owens. You know, in that category, you got Daniel Bigger in that category. You know, so it's look. There's a lot of players. I gave myself a strict criteria, as I said, because I'm a huge admirer of Dan Bigger and Alan Wynne and Ken Owens. I gave, you know. I remember sitting with Ken's father, Delamy, in Carmarthen in the pub, chatting about giving him his first professional contract back in the day, as I did with Johnny Fox, John Fox as well, John Davis, Scott Williams. You know, John Davis, another guy we've coached, you know, as a young fella, you know. So there's so many fantastic players around now who epitomise that professionalism, as you said, but I had to stay with the players I played or coached.
Yeah.
That was my criteria. Otherwise, I'd have gone. Campisi was another one on the wing, actually. Campo was another guy that I played with. Was incredible. Incredible. Philippe Sellard was another centre I played with for the Barbas, the French legend, you know. So, incredible, incredible.
Amazing names, Phil. Absolutely amazing names. But this is the side you've gone for, and it's locked in now. There's no turning back. It's Gethin Jenkins, Mark Regan, Tevita Tamiopou, Tom Palmer, Rob Norster, Mark Perrigo, Sam Warburton, captain, Scott Quinnell. And in the backs, Justin Marshall, Jonathan Davis, Andre Snowman, Bram van Straten, Regan King, Yian Evans, and Lee Halfpenny. That's not a bad outfit, is it?
No, I'm quite impressed with him, and they'll be wearing a jersey, right? Green, black, and red cuffs, red collar. So we got there now. We got Seven Sisters colours. We got Trinsara, where my wife's from.
Yeah.
We got the red of Llesley, and we got the red of Wales. So it's covering, and the black of the Barbas as well. So it's covering all the teams that are quite, you know, close to my heart, you know.
I think you've put as much thought into the jersey as you have into the team. I like that a lot. And if this side could take on any team from history, who would you want them to take on?
I'd like to see them. It might be a problem for Marshall, but I'd like to see them, and I may have to put Terry Holmes in there then, or Dwayne Peel, actually. But I'd like to see them play against the all-black team of the late 80s, early 90s, where the Wetton brothers were playing, Shelford, Grant Fox, Joe Stanley, that group. They were, you know, still, I believe to this day, one of the best rugby teams I've ever seen or played against, watched, you know. The Aussie teams of the 90s weren't bad. You know, the team we beat in 93 at Llanelli, 92, November 92. They were the current world champions at the time, the Wallabies, there with John Eales and Nick Farr-Jones involved. They were pretty good. But that team, going on to my playing days in that respect, they were pretty special at that team that won the first World Cup and carried on, you know, for quite a number of years after. They were pretty special, but I'd like to see this team have a go at them, actually.
All right, that's perfect. Right, they will take on the 1987 World Cup winning All Black side. And it just gives one final question then. If this game could take place at any ground from around the world, past or present, which ground would you like it to take place at?
Oh, it's got to be... Stirling Park would be close, but it wouldn't be big enough. It's got to be, you know, the National Stadium as it was in my day, yeah. Millennium Stadium, the Principality, best stadium in the world. So it's got to be there, with the roof closed.
We'll have it at the Millennium with the roof closed. Fantastic, Phil. It's been an absolute joy to chat to you. Thanks for joining us. Really enjoyed hearing about all those selections and some of the players you've played with and coached over the years.
Pleasure, Jeff. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to go down memory lane, if you like, and realise how blessed I've been to be involved in rugby for 30 plus years. So thank you.
No, thank you. I'll tell you one final thing, actually, is over the 3 or so years we've been running this, I've been assembling an attacking scrum team of my own, of people we've had on as guests. And some positions have been stronger than others, right? So, you know, have a little listen to this side and tell me what you think, right? Okay. So at fullback, we got Phil Steele.
Top man.
And on the right wing, we got Jamie Roberts. He's doing a job for us out of position, but he did play there a bit, you know, when he was younger.
Fullback.
Hooky slotting in at 13.
Really tried to sign him. Brilliant.
Yeah, magnificent player. He was a great fan as well. Sonny Parker at 12.
Yeah, nice one.
Ben John again doing a job for us on the wing.
Playing in the 20s with me, Ben John. Top guy.
Lovely guy, Ben. And then halfbacks of Di Bishop and Sean Connor.
Oof, you're a bit too combative, Di Bishop. You know what, Bish, what a player he was.
Yeah, and what a character he was as well. That was a very fun morning when we met him. And then in the pack, I got Martin Madden. He's doing a job for me on the loose because he's more of a tight edge, but I'm sure he could do a job there. Elliot D at hooker. That's not bad, is it? You know,
I like him. I like him on Martin. Yeah, good choice.
Adam Jones at tight end.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And you're now in at lock, Phil.
Okay, I'm happy with that.
Which is the good news. The bad news is that it's me alongside you.
You jump in the line now, so I'll push in the scrums.
Perfect. Bill, it's been an absolute joy. Thanks for joining us. And hopefully we'll chat to you again soon.
Top man, Jed. Thanks a lot, man. Enjoy your evening. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
Podcast Network.